Accession number 7328, rule number 3.
Colonel Young, rule 3. Colonel, I think you were saying that you found it difficult to get rid of recruits once you had them because it would have disrupted training.
Yes. Well, it meant that we would have to wait a long time to get replacements for them, and by the time the replacements arrived, everybody else just about finished their training. And so we had to reconcile ourselves to losing about, 10% at least, before we were fully trained. Either not all through misconduct, but the various chaps whose feet and that sort of thing stood up to ordinary service but couldn't compete with the extra commando demands on it. But the net result of it was that when we set off to go to war, actually, the commando was about 10% below strength straight away. And I had asked before we started whether we couldn't recruit to about 20% above, simply to allow for this, and that was frowned upon, and I simply couldn't get it through. But exactly what happened, there we were.
What was your role intended to be? You were being set up ab initio in Egypt. What role were you training for?
Well, we were training primarily for raiding against Italian bases and installations and so forth, which we could reach by sea, because we had no transport of our own, and doing this sort of commando work over land in the desert requires a very special kind of technique and knowledge and so on, which was exemplified by the long-range desert group, which you probably heard about. We just didn't have the equipment or the possibilities to undertake those sort of raids. Landing from sea, of course, was just what we were suited for, because, I mean, there were any number of Greek islands which the Italians had taken over, and there were all the Italian bases and things along the North African coast where we could be dropped off and do our stuff and come off the same night, almost, most of them, any of the seaplane bases and things anyway. And so that's really what we were aiming to do when we finally got trained.
Was it intended that you should operate as a whole unit, or was it intended that you might send off a company or an independent?
Well, yes, that was the theory, that each operation should be undertaken by the exact number, or strength rather, of unit or subunit would be necessary, not to take excessive people unless you were forced to. That did make things rather difficult in a way, because everybody in the commando was keen to go.
What would be the smallest subunit that you might send out for a raid then?
Well, for a raid it depends entirely on the size of the thing, but any sort of airfield or something, you wouldn't send anything less than a troop, or platoon, we would call it in those days, about 30, with probably an extra officer, two officers.
So platoon was about the smallest independent.
Oh yes, yes. Well, they were all more or less independent for 48 hours or thereabouts once they were launched, you see. And things you had to be careful about are water and ammunition. You can last all right. you needn't believe me if you don't want to, but you can last all right without food for a couple of days. You can't without water. You could without ammunition, but you're not going to do the enemy much harm if you've run out.
What were the main elements in your training syllabus when you were forming up? What did you concentrate on?
The overriding training was to get everybody properly fit and find out who the weak characters were. I don't mean to say morally, but physically. And so we did a lot of physical training, that sort of thing, unarmed combat. When we undertook guards and sentries and things during the night hours that we had to have round the camp, they were in full sort of fighting order, as you might say, and were very dangerous. We happened to have a camp which was not far from the camp cinema, and when this performance was over, people would come back through our lines, at least until the word got round, and they found themselves not being challenged but just jumped upon, and didn't make us very popular. I went sent my officers round to explain to various people, and after we were given a wide berth, but certainly the first fortnight, 3 weeks, there were a lot of sort of slight incidents, as you might say. Well, physical training was the main thing.
What sort of physical training was it?
Mainly just strengthening exercises, marches over very difficult, soft up and down sand dunes and things like that. I don't think we had a PT instructor as such. No, we hadn't. Each chap had to take it on himself. We had to take it for granted, which was not misplaced, that everybody who came was a trained soldier. In fact, we hadn't got to teach a fellow to shoot his rifle and that sort of thing, nor had we to teach him elementary tactics, fire and movement and that sort of thing with his section, because they knew that, and they were very good at it, most of them. We had to superimpose upon that watermanship and boat work and so on. If we were going to work with the Navy, we had to be capable of getting in and out of a whaler without making a nonsense of itself and rowing it reasonably well when we got it. And the officers had to be able to steer and do their stuff with currents and so on and so forth. And they were also taught sort of elementary parts of sappering, like knots and lashings and how to cross simple obstacles and so on. Then we had to start on demolitions. This was a little bit tricky because there was only one engineer personnel in the unit. We were not allowed to recruit any sappers, and so there was only one engineer, and that was me. I had to start off by teaching the officers and sergeants, and then said, "Go thou and do likewise to the rank and file." And of course, it's very simple, the elementary demolitions like cutting railway lines and blowing up pipelines and doing damage to houses and oil tanks and things. The officers and NCO, some of them had done a little bit before, they picked it up perfectly easily. And we were just about getting through to all the rank and file when training came to a stop. And we thought, well, we can only allow a certain amount of time on this. So that was watermanship. Boatmanship. Demolitions and explosives. I think unarmed combat, that was a thing which we...
Who actually taught that?
Yes. Well, we had to get chaps to teach us that. The Spaniards, as you might imagine, were pretty good at it.
Natural bandits.
Yes. And I think that was about all, because we really didn't... we didn't have any sort of extra equipment that might enable us to undertake anything terribly ambitious. We had to take things that we, you know, had reasonable prospect of success. And if your basic infantry training was good, well, you were all right. I mean, there was always some officer or NCO who could set the charges and that sort of thing while you covered him and so on.
Did you do any tactical exercises, attacks and so on, while you were
no. training? No. We didn't have any combined training at all, except with the sailors, except with the Navy. And we did quite a lot with them on the bitter legs.
Did you find that it was easy to work with the Navy?
Oh, very. Very, yes. The only time there was a nonsense with the Navy was at the raid on Castelrizzo, which I was in the Sudan at the time, but 50 did it. Stephen Rose was there, he was second in command, and the Navy made a complete balls of it, in the planning mainly. I won't go into detail about that, because I, unless you particularly want to, but I could let you have a quick look through Stephen Rose's report on the thing, which he wrote immediately the thing was over. And it shows you what a nonsense it was.
I think perhaps you'd better stick to your own.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, mm. Because I think he will be...
Yes, you might collar him and get him to do something. Mm.
How was it then that you left 50 Commando and became commander of 52?
Well, I had to go into hospital and have an operation. And 50 had just finished their training. In fact, we had been on one raid, which was aborted at the last moment because the Italians started marching into Greece. And the commander-in-chief, Med, immediately summoned back the two destroyers on which we were travelling. And it was terribly disappointing because it was our first operation. We'd been training and practising this for about a month. And the sailors were just as keen as we were. And the day we were going to land, we were going to land that night, we were about 150 miles offshore. This thing was called off, and though the senior naval chap signaled back and said, please submit that we're just ready to go and that sort of thing, and we will be back at Alexandra in 48 hours, not a bit of it. We had to turn around and go back again.
Where were you planning to attack?
It's a place called Bomber. It was a seaplane base, and it was about 500 miles or so, just over 500 miles, west of Alexandria, along the North African coast. It would have suited us a treat if we could have got ashore. Oh, it was terribly disappointing. That was an occasion where I took the whole lot.
Well, what were you planning to do there? Were you going to land away from the base?
And yes, and march down to it, about 3 miles, we thought.
What about the Navy? Were they going to give you any fire support?
Oh, yes, but not then. But they weren't allowed to shoot anything until they saw the thing catching fire, which, of course, never came off, because we never landed.
So it was to be a stealthy landing?
Stealthy landing.
A quick approach march.
But yes, that's right, about 3 miles.
And assault.
Well, they had a certain amount of barracks there, but they had further barracks which were further along the coast in the other direction. But we hoped we should be able to kill off this lot before they arrived. And
then the Navy would...
Yes, and they could come in and shoot at any boats that were left on the seaplanes that were still there and the buildings once we'd left, and because they would know when we would gone, when very lights would go up, and the boats from which we had landed could move down the coast, you see, nearer the barracks, so that when we had to come out, we didn't have to come all the way back to the... They were picked up straight off. That was the theory.
These were motorboats, whether they were going to put you ashore.
What?
They were motorboats.
No, you rowed.
They were whalers.
Yes, the ship's boats they were, but they had an extra two, I think, on each destroyer. Those to take the chaps.
So that operation was aborted, and then you were...
And then, I went off into hospital, and... Oh, it's the most unpleasant thing. I had an abscess, right? Do you mean... Oh. I was in hospital, and 50 Commando went off to Crete, whence they were going to lay on raids against the Dodecanese, and so on. At the same time, 52 Commando, which was about a month junior to us in time, had likewise finished their... training schedule, and unfortunately had lost their commanding officer, who had been invalided, and I was told to take it on, as they were ordered to the Sudan almost immediately, and I didn't know anybody in the commando except one or two of the officers. However, the journey down to the Sudan, which we went by lorry to Suez, and thence by a French passenger steamer for a couple of days down the Red Sea to Port Sudan, where we disembarked. And then we went by train to our sector on the front, or frontier, I suppose you might say, where we'd been assigned. We couldn't go direct because the Italians then had occupied Cassola, which was on the railway line, which went straight away down south from Port Sudan, so we had to go all the way into Khartoum and come out again. However, we did that, and we fetched up at Railhead, which was Gudarif, and... 2 days later, we were hoisted into the line at Galabat.
What was the strength of 52 when you took them over?
We had three companies of 120, approximately, and about 50. Signalers and torn. So that would be 360, 420, roundabout.
What was it up to strengthen NCOs and officers?
Yes, it was. Well, as far as NCOs went, if we had a vacancy for an NCO, we selected a chap and made him one. Because it not only gave... his section and so on a bit of a boost, but it gave him some more pay as well.
How was it equipped? Did it just have standard infantry?
Yes. Rifles, bayonets, and daggers, a fanny, which we used to call. And when we went into what I call a straightforward action, in which there was going to be ordinary sort of infantry fighting, we took Bren guns as well. But on an ordinary raid, unless you specially wanted Bren guns for some covering the withdrawal or something like that, you would just leave them behind, because not only were they rather awkward to carry for the chap, but they also somebody had to carry their ammunition.
You were travelling light.
Yes. Well, I mean, it wasn't terribly light. I had 70 rounds draped round me. I was the commanding officer, and all the officers had about 50 rounds which they carried in case they ran out of ammunition. Yes, that's all the equipment we had, rifle and bayonet and this dagger knife. And
what about heavy weapons? Did you have any machine guns or mortars?
None. That's the trouble. When we came to Crete, we found ourselves holding a rearguard defensive position, and we were battling with a German infantry mountain division, which had mortars, it had heavy machine guns, it had anti-tank rifles, and all sorts of things. And we had to wait till they were about 100 yards away before we took any steps at all. So you had to ensure that your first shot or two was the winner.
Now, you mentioned signals. What did you have? What sort of communications equipment did you have?
Well, we had four wireless sets. I can't for the life of me tell you what make they were, but their range in Abyssinia was 5 miles. Therefore, with our four wireless sets, you could only get about 20 miles from base, and then you were out of control, so to speak, and you couldn't get either help from base, nor could they send you any, because they didn't know what was happening. And so we always had to make sure that the as best we could, our places we were going to stop for the night or for the afternoon were well known, and that we stuck to them as far as possible.
You had to have a rigid schedule then.
Yes, fairly rigid, which of course made it very much more difficult, and at night it was absolutely impossible, really. Well, that was the equipment as such wasn't available.
Had you done a lot of training for night?
Night work? Yes, we used to train about two nights a week, I suppose, at least. We didn't very go far from camp, really, because we really wanted to get people used to dealing with an unexpected situation during the hours of darkness, you know.
What was the general state of the training of 52 Commander when you joined them? Were they at the same sort of level as 50 had been?
Well, I think they're... standard of training was all right, because they had followed practically the same syllabus as we had in 50. Fox Davis, who had been my second in command in 50, was actually commanding 52, you see. And so, apart from the discipline side wasn't as good as it should have been.
Why was that?
Well, switch off. Well, I found discipline was a little bit difficult to maintain when I first arrived, largely because I knew so little about the unit. However, as we were on active service, there was little opportunity for men to get into trouble. And we very soon found that discipline was improving. And when it came to operations, it was quite satisfactory.
What was the morale like?
Excellent. We got on very well with the Indian soldiers, because they were, of course, expert in mountain warfare, jungle warfare, which we knew nothing about. And we would say to any patrol who went out, now look here, you'll be working with the Baluchis or the Garhwalis, whoever it was, and you get hold of the sergeant and ask him what it's like in front there, and he'll tell you what to do, and they did.
Were you actually put under the command of the Indian Brigade? Yes, I was.
I was under command. Mm. Except for, I say, for discipline and things like that, which they couldn't cope with.
So for discipline, you were an independent commander?
Commander,
very
yes.
Wide powers.
Yes, very wide powers, yes.
When you arrived in the area occupied by the 9th Indian Infantry Brigade, what were their first instructions to you? What did the brigadier ask you to do with your commando?
Well, I had to explain, first of all, what we could do, because he'd never met such a force before. It was quite irregular. And we had come from a completely flat, or fairly flat, sand desert into this rather bushy, scrubby type of country. And so a little time had to be allotted to our chaps just getting acclimatized to it, and that was agreed upon. And then we sort of agreed that we would fit in with the sort of brigade program, which was merely to keep the Italians busy as best we could by raiding and fighting patrols going in different points and so on. And I said, fine, we will try and come into that as best we can. And that's what we did.
You weren't actually put into a defensive position?
No. We didn't have the weapons for it, you see. We did, I can't remember the number of sort of small patrols we did, but we did two, which were on a fairly large scale. One which was led by second command, and that I had malaria then. And the other one I went on myself, and we took all the chaps. And we got across the Italian lines of communication all right, but it had taken us so long to get there that we could only spend about 3 or 4 hours on the job, cutting the telegraph wires and things like that. And then we had to come out again.
How far did you have to go to get across the Italian lines?
Well, I should say about the river bent a little bit like that, so it came from about nearest point, it was about 5 miles, I should say, to their LFC. But of course, we were about 12 miles or so behind where their defended localities were, because we'd gone out and then in, you see, gone round the corner, as you might say.
Gone round the flank.
Yes. Mm.
How long did it take you to get there then, to your
Well, that particular one took 5 days. From the time we left our base camp, we had two marches, 2 days sort of keeping fairly close to the river, and then one night in and out, and then two marches back again.